This is the IBJ podcast for the week of Monday, April 12th, 2021. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. We've been talking for several weeks now about COVID-19 vaccinations, how quickly shots are getting into the arms of Hoosiers, and how that's changed our definition of safe behavior. Of course, there's a giant footnote in the story of our emergence from pandemic life. There is no vaccine yet for anyone under the age of 16. Many parents and grandparents are now either fully vaccinated or in the process of getting vaccinated, and they now face a whole new set of questions about the kinds of activities and interactions that are safe for unvaccinated children. For example, just how safe are vaccinated grandparents around their unvaccinated grandchildren? Should anybody be wearing a mask? Is it still possible for a vaccinated adult to infect a child? Is it possible for a child to infect a vaccinated adult? Let's say you're having a get-together inside. How many vaccinated adults should you allow near your kids at one time? If you have vaccinated folks over for a cookout, who, if anyone, should be wearing a mask? Another new element to consider are the new variants of COVID-19, which we're still studying, but could be more transmissible than what I will call COVID classic, the COVID that we're used to. Do these variants present a greater threat to children? Are the variants changing the risk assessment for in-person daycare and in-person school, or even for youth sports? In some cases, and this is really the frustrating part of it, we have a lot of the same questions that we had last year. What sports are safe? Which sports should require a mask? Is it safe for kids to travel, either by car or by plane? And why don't we have vaccines yet for kids? When are they going to get here? Which kids will get them first? Well, to answer all of these questions, many of which were suggested for this podcast by fellow members of the Midtown Parents Facebook group I belong to here in Indianapolis, I am again leaning on the expertise of Dr. James Wood. Dr. Wood is an expert in pediatric infectious diseases. He's a pediatrician at Riley Children's Hospital here in Indianapolis, as well as an assistant professor of pediatrics in the Indiana University School of Medicine in the Ryan White Center for Pediatric Infectious Diseases. He was a terrific help last August answering our questions about kids and COVID for the podcast. I think we had an even better conversation last week. Here's Dr. Wood. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the podcast, Dr. James Wood. Thank you so much for making time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And I want to start off the conversation right off the bat with a recent bit of good news. It was good news to my family, and dig into it a little bit. I think the biggest breakthrough involving kids in the last year was the guidance from the CDC in March that fully vaccinated grandparents can hug their unvaccinated grandchildren. Now, you have two kids. How old are they again?
Yeah, I have a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
How big a deal was this in your family?
Yeah, you know, this was honestly a really big deal. I think for stress level for us as parents, my kids were ecstatic. And then, of course, the grandparents couldn't have been happier. This was for us probably the most stressful part, was just the risk that we were worried about with the grandparents and with older relatives in general.
Just to be clear, when we say fully vaccinated grandparents can have close contact with their grandkids, what range of interaction are we talking about? I mean, is this like a hug in the driveway and then you speed off? Or can, you know, the 6-year-old twin sit on grandma's lap for 2 hours and watch Despicable Me?
Right. You know, I think with all of this, it's not cut and dry as usual. And unfortunately, the general rule here, honestly, is that the more contact you have with somebody, the more at risk you are of passing virus on if you get it. But the truth of the matter is, if you're fully vaccinated, your risk is quite low. And so, again, I think that it is a little bit of a personal opinion a feeling with the grandparents. How do they feel about the risk and everything? And we tried it like with our family. We try to be very open and honest to say, hey, this isn't zero risk, but a few things are, and they were comfortable and we were comfortable. So I guess to get to your question, I think it's, you know, if we're fully vaccinated, meaning at least 2 weeks after vaccine of both doses of vaccine, if you're getting the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine, it's okay to watch that movie, to be close. You know, that's the message here is, I think that the vaccines are very efficacious, and it's been a great you know, really nice to see how well they've worked. And I think that it's not zero risk, but weighing the risks and benefits of that interaction, that time with grandparents, I think it's safe to do so.
So I'll dip into my life for a second. So our 5-year-old is going to spend the night with grandma on Saturday. Is that okay?
I would say yes. Full disclosure, we've done that as well. Okay. We've had both of our kids stay at grandma and grandpa's house at the insistence of grandma and grandpa. Nothing's 100%. The vaccine's not 100%, but you know, the trials have been really encouraging, and you know, the risk of severe disease is very small. So it is the type of thing where myself, you know, from a personal opinion, it's safe, and the data seems to support that as well.
Does the risk go both ways? Is it the child, I guess, you know, potentially could pose a risk to the grandparent because the vaccine is 100%. But if the grandparent is fully vaccinated, can the grandparent still be a carrier?
Everything right now showing that's also extremely low. You know, the guidance right now from everybody is, especially around others and strangers, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, is to, you know, to practice social distancing and everything. But in general, and kind of just look, stepping back, obviously COVID has presented new challenges for everybody. But, you know, when we think about vaccine preventable diseases in general, when you're vaccinated, we don't think of you as somebody that's going to spread it very much. And so that seems to be the case for COVID as well, that if you're vaccinated, you're unlikely to spread it very much, if at all.
Should anybody feel any pressure in that situation, the grandkid or the grandparent, to wear a mask anyway?
I mean, in general, that's a really kind of a personal, personal discussion that you could have. But I would say from a science perspective, there's really nothing, you know, that's not necessary, not something that has to be done. I'll tell you that, you know, it's funny because between both sets of grandparents for my kids, my parents were much more conservative, much more worried about it. And for a while, my mom was actually wearing a mask. But I think actually as time has gone on and she's kind of seen more of the information about the vaccine, she's been more comfortable taking the mask off, for what that's worth.
We're gonna now jump into the complex swirling waters of all the scenarios for vaccinated adults and unvaccinated kids. And I apologize in advance, but
sure, this is what we do.
These are questions that we've received from other parents. I quickly want to go through what I believe are still current CDC guidelines for people who are vaccinated. My understanding is you're vaccinated, you're fully vaccinated. You can visit inside a home or other kind of private setting without a mask on with other fully vaccinated people. You can visit inside a home or private setting without a mask with one household of unvaccinated people who are not risk of severe disease.
Correct.
Okay. You can travel domestically without needing to take your pre or post travel test.
That's right.
Now, there's still some things that you shouldn't try to do. One is visit indoors without a mask with people who are at increased risk of severe illness.
That's right.
And you still should not attend either medium or large gatherings, even if you've been fully vaccinated.
That's correct. And, you know, that kind of gets down to this thinking outside of just the personal and the small group of vaccinated people, but the larger public health implications. And you know, it's often too hard to make these policies individualistic for large groups. And so, you know, the current recommendation still is, even if you're vaccinated, you know, let's hang on a little longer and let's not mass gather at this point.
Just not mass gather, either with or without mask.
That's right. Yes. Okay. Gathering in large numbers.
Gathering in large numbers is out. Indoors, I assume.
That's right.
I went to my first outdoor church service on Sunday, and we were, I mean, certainly appropriately distanced, mm-hmm. And wearing masks. And I think everybody felt comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that everything like that you're doing, you're wearing a mask, you're distance, you're outdoors. I mean, you're knocking down the risk with each one of those. And so a large outdoor gathering spaced with masks is very low risk.
So let's dip into these scenarios for vaccinated and unvaccinated people or so. Just in case I don't specify, I just want to make sure that anytime that I say kids, that I do mean unvaccinated kids. I mean, there's really no vaccine right now for anybody under 16.
Correct.
So here's a scenario from Easter weekend in our household. In our household, the adults are vaccinated. The 5-year-old is not. We went to another household for Easter where all the adults are vaccinated, but there was a 16-year-old who is not. So you've got unvaccinated 16-year-old, unvaccinated 5-year-old in the same house. Was that okay? Did we do something wrong?
No, I mean, you didn't do anything wrong there. I think that obviously there are everybody's, you know, the health of the 16-year-old, as long as they're an otherwise healthy child, same thing with the 5-year-old, meaning they're not at high risk for severe disease. The recommendation right now is that's okay. You know, you are one other family with vaccinated adults and low risk individuals. We're getting to this point where everybody's feeling the fatigue and nobody wants to do the wrong thing. But there are certain things that we can, you know, find, and it's good and healthy for us to be able to do as people we need to socialize.
And we were indoors part of the time. My son, for some reason, loves wearing a mask. So he wore his mask, which I guess is better than not, but he didn't necessarily need to.
It's funny that you say that because my kids will do the same. And I've been amazed at the ability of children to just kind of make it part of their routine and wear it. And I don't discourage it if they want to do it, certainly. But
so along similar lines about parties and get-togethers, I mean, we have summers coming up. I mean, people want to celebrate and do different stuff over the summer. Is it safe for a group of vaccinated adults and unvaccinated kids to get together just for a big group party or cookout?
Yeah, I think especially as the weather gets warmer, I mean, yes, especially if it's outdoors, you know, in a well-ventilated house or if you're outdoors, this is the type of thing where it's not going to be, it's not zero risk, but it's not very high risk. The kids in general are not at risk for very severe disease. I mean, obviously any illness, any hospitalization in a kid is a big deal. And we want to minimize that as much as possible. But as the weather gets warmer, you know, we can do things outside and we can do them safely. And I think that's also part of just this mental health that we all need. And so, you know, having a cookout outdoors and being responsible, you know, in that way, I think is totally reasonable.
So things are winding down now on the evening of July 4th and everyone's like, hey, let's watch a movie. So they go inside and they all pile onto cushions in the basement and watch a movie together.
Yeah, this is right. These are the tricky nuances that we all, right? This is reality. This is what we have to think about. You know, large groups of kids getting together in small spaces. I would say that again, like if the kids are going to watch a movie and they're unvaccinated and, you know, you're indoors and it's lots of different families, I would encourage you to wear a mask at that point just to watch, you know, to sit there inside and watch the movie. I think it's the safest thing. It's not a huge burden for the kids in general. And that would be the advice. I mean, if you're talking two families together, maybe not as big of a deal, but if it's a fairly, you know, large group of individuals, then it's probably just best to wear the mask while inside.
I think I kind of asked this question before, but I'm going to ask it again because I got another question on it. So adults who are vaccinated, it's still possible they could infect children who are not, but it is very unlikely.
That's right.
Even if this vaccinated adult is now fully engaged in a pre-COVID lifestyle, going to bars, that is still very unlikely that they would pass it along.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously that's going to be one little, you know, that's a step up in terms of risk, right? Like if you have an adult that's, you know, not socializing a ton, not doing a ton and vaccinated, that's an incredibly low risk scenario. You increase that risk a little bit if they're vaccinated, but doing more of that, you know, higher risk activity. Again, the vaccine itself seems to be very good at obviously preventing infection. There's very little evidence of asymptomatic carriage with the vaccine. So that's a little bit higher risk person who's doing all those activities and it's not encouraged to do so. But again, in general, pretty low risk and, you know, all taken all together.
And again, I apologize if some of this sounds like a broken record, but people ask these questions in many different ways. Kids inside having a play date is okay.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about again is kind of the size of the group, and that just has to do with how much exposure, right? And so a couple, like the general rule now is that two kids, you know, two households, kids playing together, it's okay. Preferably they'd be outside, but indoors if, you know, weather, you know, doesn't permit that. And that this is obviously a dynamic thing, right? As the community spread changes, sometimes these rules change. So right now, you know, we are seeing a little bit, you know, we haven't gone all the way down in the community like we hoped we would, but we're still not at a very high level like we were before. And so right now it seems to be okay because kids tend to reflect what the community looks like right now. And so if we started surging back up again, those rules could change a little bit. But in general right now, you know, although not as low as we'd like it to be, it's still fairly low in the community compared to where we've been.
Let's say I have several siblings who just don't want to get vaccinated and they want to come around the house and hang out. Obviously, I'm not going to let them inside my house. Is it okay for them to be outside with my son?
Yeah, well, I think that the conversation there just has to be around like what do they, this is your house, these are your rules, these are your kids. And so, you know, my suggestion, my advice there is I think outside distanced is okay. Mask is even better at that point. If they're refusing to wear a mask, then, you know, I think then the suggestion there is then I wouldn't get within 6 feet. Just because, you know, that risk is too high and we've made it this far. Let's like get over the finish line and really feel better about this moving forward.
So we're on the back deck with Uncle unvaccinated. Don't get within 6 feet of him.
That would be the recommendation. Yeah. If they're not wearing a mask.
And then again, I got, you know, 20 kids, each from a different household playing outside. That's okay.
Yeah. Again, like that's one of those where you're outside, risk is low. I probably wouldn't have a big, rugby scrum or something where they're all jumping on top of each other. Now I realize these are kids and they're going to do what kids do. You know, in general, outside is obvious that knocks your risk down quite a bit. What we've told our kids is if they're playing in the neighborhood with a large, like a lot of kids where they're not just riding bikes or running around, if they're really going to be, you know, in a close contact, we've asked them to wear masks. If they're riding bikes, if they're playing outside, but not in a huge group and not, you know, really super close contact with being outside without the mask is okay.
Let me switch over to variants. I was not aware that I needed to be worried about these, but I got a lot of questions about variants. What do we know so far about how susceptible kids are to the COVID variants? I'm going to tell you, I don't know the term of art for whatever original COVID is. So I'm calling it COVID classic, if that's okay. Are kids at greater health risk in general from these variants that we're hearing about on the news now?
So variants are obviously, they're mutations within the virus that these happen in viruses all the time. This isn't unique to COVID. This happens in a lot of different viruses. It is and was to be anticipated that the virus would mutate some. That is very, very normal. Obviously, it does pose a little bit more complications and a little bit more challenge when you're talking about immunity and vaccines and everything. So with the current variants that we're seeing, and right now it's looking like that B117 variant that started in the UK seems to be the dominant variant that's in the US these days. It's a little bit of a mixed signal right now as to what the numbers are looking like. It does seem to be that it may be more transmissible, but in general, it doesn't seem, kids are still low risk. Is it more severe than COVID classic, if you will? The jury's a little bit still out on that, but I can just tell you from, you know, what we're hearing on the national level, and especially locally, we haven't seen a big surge in kids admitted to the hospital. So we're certainly not seeing huge numbers of kids with acute COVID coming into the hospital, even though this variant is out there. That doesn't mean that things may change. You know, Michigan, for instance, has seen a pretty big rise in the number of kids infected. But in general, it's too early, I think, to say for sure whether it's more severe. It does seem that it may be a bit more transmissible, but in general, we're not seeing these huge numbers. You know, kids aren't all of a sudden a high-risk group that we're super worried about, but we are keeping a really close watch on this.
As a side note for adults, I think Dr. Fauci was on one of the Sunday news shows saying that a 60% increased risk of death from B117. I assume he's talking about the whole population and then mostly adults there. But is that accurate? Did I hear that correctly?
That's right. Yep. That is correct. Yep. And that is mainly pertaining to adults. That again does come from the fact, obviously, as all along, adults were at a much higher risk in general of severe infection. You heard that correctly. It does seem like it is more severe in adults, but again, in kids, that jury is still out a bit. And again, relative to where their baseline risk is, we haven't seen a huge jump. So it seems like this variant may be, you know, not to get too technical here, but basically the way that this works is that the virus needs, right, that spike protein needs to bind onto your cells. And it seems like this variant might be, for lack of a better term, a little more sticky, a little able to stick onto the cells a little bit better than the previous variants and the, you know, the original coronavirus. And so from that perspective, that's why it may be more more transmissible.
So people like me who have been fully vaccinated for COVID classic, are we essentially protected against B117 as well? Is that what's showing so far?
Yeah, the data is very encouraging in that front as well. I think a lot of the concern, obviously, is as the virus mutates and varies, are these protective antibodies that we have, are they going to be protect us from the variant? And right now, all the information looks like for this particular variant that it is very protective. And so, yes, that is good, a good thing.
That is great. I'm 25% more optimistic already. I heard some people worry that just the presence of B.1.1.7 is changing the risk assessment for in-person school in the fall and in-person daycare.
At this point, I would say it's too early to change any course on that right now. I think that the information that we have, it's not posing a high enough risk or really a higher risk in general to say, all right, we need to go back to all virtual school. I think, again, we'll keep a close monitor on this, but is it going to change? Like, can things change as we get more information? This is being studied. Is it possible where things could shift? Sure. But at right now, with the information we have, I think we've shown that kids, appropriately distanced with masks, we can still go back to school and in childcare as planned.
So let's switch over to summer activities. What are the risks of participating in youth sports right now? And I think I probably asked this question 9 months ago. Mm-hmm. And maybe the answer isn't any different. A lot of folks obviously are thinking, can I sign my kid up for sports this summer? And they don't know what to do.
Yeah. So again, I think in general, outdoor sports poses a pretty low risk. I mean, I think the community has done a good job of getting that message out of, okay, let's make sure we're doing the right things, walking to and from the field, not spectators staying distance, doing all those things. The risk of kids on the field, if they're especially in outdoor settings, is pretty low. We've seen, we have not seen big outbreaks of children on teams getting it. Are there some here and there? Yes. And again, like in places like Michigan and things like that, where numbers have risen a great deal, that's something to watch because again, the community, the level of virus and spread in the community seems to be very correlated with what we're seeing in kids. And so at the current level in the community, outdoor sports, when we weigh the risks and benefits, it does seem to kind of lean on the benefit and to say, it's okay to do these sports right now. Again, taking the proper precautions, going to and from the field and making sure that we're being mindful about not interacting in areas where we don't have to.
I was really heartened to see some of the stats that the NCAA provided after March Madness. They were testing everybody in the bubble or the pseudo bubble every day, all the players and including all the coaches and really everybody involved. And they said out of like some 30,000 tests that they conducted, there were only, I think, 15 positive tests. And these guys, I mean, we saw the sports, we saw the games, they're all over each other. I mean, right. That's a lot of breathing. Yeah. I mean, that would indicate to me, kind of anecdotally, that, sports are okay for the participants.
I think what that really speaks to is when we have these are a group of motivated individuals who will follow the rules to do what they want, to play the game they want to play. So the mitigation strategies work, right? That's what this tells me is that if we're doing the right things, wearing masks, not gathering in large masses unnecessarily, these things work and we can do things safely. Obviously, they had a lot of resources available to them to be able to do that. And that's the key. But as we generalize that to things like schools and sport and youth sports, I just encourage parents who have questions about it, ask the organization, what are your policies around this? How are you going about keeping people protected? Because I think it can be done safely when the rules are followed and people are really, doing their best to keep the mitigation strategies up and to really follow the rules.
This is strictly just for me and my family. What do you think about outdoor swimming lessons?
Yeah, swimming has shown at least last summer too, not to be super high risk. So it does seem like that's something that, we've told people that that's an okay thing to do. And my kids are actually planning on doing it this year as well.
If you have a sports league that's playing inside, probably a good idea to wear masks.
That's been the general recommendation. Yeah. You know, again, it's not a super high risk scenario just with youths, but yeah, if you're inside, a mask is definitely the safest way to stay protected.
Let me ask you about traveling, since you have somehow found yourself in Florida. How did you guys get down there, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, we drove. Yeah. That's kind of one of the things that we've kind of decided that if we were going to travel, we were going to drive. And that, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about traveling a bit more here, but that was one of our stipulations, is that I've put a lot more miles on my car the last year and a half.
So taking the family down in the car, I would assume is a safe form of travel. What about putting kids on a plane?
Yeah. So the general recommendation, right, is that vaccinated folks, it's okay. It's okay to fly, you know, wearing a mask. And again, social distancing. For kids, the recommendation for unvaccinated folks is don't travel if you don't have to. If you need to travel, and that does include kids, that, you know, wearing a mask, social distancing is acceptable. And it doesn't seem to be as high a risk as maybe we originally thought it was. So yeah, are there times where you do need to travel in with the kids? Absolutely. If it's not totally necessary, you might still hold off on that till they can get the vaccine. Okay.
If it is totally necessary to bring my 5-year-old on the plane, wear a mask, stay away from other people.
Yep.
Okay.
And it doesn't, like I mentioned, it's not zero risk, but it doesn't seem to be a very high risk situation, which is, I think, originally early on, the concern was that, you know, recycled air in the plane, it's very high risk scenario. And it seems to not be quite as high risk as we originally thought, and with the mask on, especially.
Now, when you guys drove down, did you stay in a hotel room or did you do it in a day?
We did it. We actually stayed with family. So we kind we cheated. We have another, a family that was halfway in between, and they were vaccinated as well. You know, the adults were, so we were able to stay with them halfway through.
So I'm driving down to Florida, and man, I'm tired. I got to stop in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We got to spend the night at the Quality Inn. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, that obviously is a scenario that happens. If you're able to go to the hotel, sleep, leave without going to the breakfast buffet and intermingling with a whole bunch of folks, it's okay. You know, again, you want to maybe ask the hotel, what are your policies? A lot of these places are advertising on their websites and things. This is what we're doing. These are our cleaning policies. It's probably a good idea to check that out. But in general, you know, that's a pretty low risk scenario if they're following the guidelines as they should. But
given, you know, responsible cleaning protocol, just being in the room that was occupied by somebody else the night before is not a deal breaker.
Correct. Yeah. Again, early on, there was a lot of debate and concern about transmission through what we call fomites, or things that are, you know, non-human to human contact, and very low scenario there. So that does not worry me.
Let's talk about vaccines. We have vaccines for adults and adolescents as young as 16. Remind us, why don't we have vaccines for kids?
Yeah. So it just comes down to doing the trials in kids. And this is a very pretty standard way that vaccine development happens, is it's first tested in adults, if safe and effective, start moving down the age range to go to kids. And so Pfizer right off the bat started testing theirs down to 16 years of age. Moderna did it down to 18 years of age. Now that it's been proven to be safe and effective, they've actually both completed trials in kids as young as 12. And they are actually just recently, within the last couple of weeks, have shown that their data is very encouraging. Looks like kids make a very good response to the vaccine, similar to adults, and tolerated it very well, similar to adults. And so all that is encouraging. I expect that they will probably be going to the FDA with that data, probably in the next several weeks to month, I would say, most likely, to try to get that approval. But yes, it's the same exact vaccine that the adults are getting. It just needed to be tested in children. And then, of course, when we start getting to the younger children below 12 and all the way down to 6 months of age, similarly, same vaccine, but it needs to be tested for safety and efficacy. But then even we do look at different dosing regimens for them. And so giving younger kids, a lower dose, if it generates that same immunity or antibody response, is what they'll be shooting for.
Okay. So that's something that they're paying special attention to for the younger kids.
That's right. Yeah.
Is how much medicine do you inject?
Exactly.
From the 12-year-olds down, Do you think that they would still kind of stair step it? Like maybe you get down to 8 and then you get down to 4.
No. So for that trial, it's going to go all just 12 years of age down to 6 months of age. They do the trial in a couple of different phases, but they're actually combining them all into one. So the first is this dose response. And so they'll try the different doses and look at the response. Once they find that sweet spot of a dose, they will test them all and look for how efficacious it is. But it won't go down to 8 and then 6 and then 4. They'll look at it across that whole age group.
Okay. And have they begun that work yet?
Yes. Yep. That work started in the beginning of the year. Of course, enrolling kids in a vaccine trial is a little bit harder than adults. And thankfully, but we don't see as many illnesses in kids. And so the numbers are a little bit different in terms of how many they need to enroll. Mm-hmm. But the nice part here is that we are able to extrapolate some of that information from adults to say, well, adults were protected at this antibody level. And so we can say, you know, if it's a 1-year-old and they made that same antibody level, we can assume that they're protected. Obviously, the studies will be ongoing to look to see how many actually do get infected. But we can take some of those things that we learned from the adults to extrapolate it to the kids.
So I know this is totally a guess, but when might we be able to put vaccines in the arms of kids under 12?
Yeah, if I had to take a guess at that one, I would say likely by the end of the year. I would love to tell you it's going to be before the school year starts. Most people want me to say that. It's not, I would say that's not impossible, but more than likely it will be, fall, winter time would be my guess, just in terms of how long it takes to do these trials. And again, I would say that they've been amazing, you know, the vaccine trials, both in adults and children, have been amazing. They've surprised us at how they've been able to do it in terms of the speed at which they've been able to do these trials, while also maintaining that really rigorous, the trials themselves. I mean, speaking to people and knowing people that are doing these trials, they are not cutting corners. They are doing all the things that we would want them to do. It's just that they're able to do these things in a much quicker manner because of the resources that are being put into it right now.
And speaking of school, I mean, August and September are still a bit away. Is it too early to start asking about the precautions that schools are going to be taking in the fall?
No, I think now is the time to be asking about that. And I think that, you know, what we've learned each kind of step along the way during this whole pandemic is let's think ahead. Let's get ahead of this thing. Let's ask those questions 6 months in advance, right? Because when we're doing it a month in advance, a week in advance, that's too late, right? So we need to be asking these questions now.
Should we at this point just expect kids to be wearing masks in school and being distant at some point?
Yeah, I would say yes. I would say I would expect kids to be in masks for school. Again, I know that it's not the most comfortable thing in the world, but again, in that setting, kids within a school, especially the younger ones, seem to tolerate it pretty well. And again, when we look at the things that we can do that are pretty non-invasive, that is one of them. And so I would fully expect that kids will be in masks for the school year to start, at least.
I wanted to ask real quick about infants, because I had a couple of people who have newborns who mm-hmm. asked questions. Do they need to be particularly careful about putting their infants in contact with somebody outside their household, vaccinated or unvaccinated?
Yeah, I think that, newborns in general, right, are susceptible to infections. Again, COVID in general hasn't seemed to affect that population hugely. That said, I would limit the outside contact with especially unvaccinated folks for a newborn, just in the general sense of spreading any germs in general, but certainly for COVID.
I'm just guessing that, you know, some moms and dads might be a bit leery of even having like vaccinated grandparents, you know, coming in and spending a lot of time with the kids. Do you have any feelings about that?
Yeah, I would just tell, you know, I think the parents just need to, that's a decision that, you know, they have to make, and it's a decision you kind of have to respect. I think as a medical professional, what I do in that scenario is I just try to inform the parents about what those risks are and kind of saying, look, you know, newborns are at risk for infections, both COVID and non-COVID. And, if grandma and grandpa really want to see the baby and you're not comfortable with it, you just have to kind of have that, unfortunately, that tough conversation and see the baby, as they get a little bit older.
And one more quick question about kids that have already had COVID, that they tested for it and they're positive, and then they wrote it out. Is there anything that the parents would need to be on the lookout for in terms of watching for signs that the kid is a long hauler, that there might be lingering long-term effects?
There's a lot more of this me waffling. There's a lot of unknowns with that, right? Yeah. We're still trying to figure out exactly who and why that is. I would tell you that in general, I think probably the best thing there are people that are experiencing these things. I think trying to, once physically feeling well, trying to get back into a routine, trying to get, you know, mental health wise, get back into a good state of mind, not, you know, getting exercise, doing those things. That's probably the best thing that you can do to prevent having, you know, some of the long-term effects. Now, there are people that are getting these things despite that. But I think, again, not just unique to COVID, we see kids sometimes with lingering effects after infection in general. And it is absolutely a challenge. But, usually the best thing that we tell folks is try to get back into some routine. And I know sometimes it's hard because they don't feel up to it, but try to push yourself a little bit to get back into those routines and get your body up and going again. But we don't yet know, you know, what are the things to look out for? Like, hey, they had, you know, symptom X, Y, or Z. That means they're probably going to go on to this long haul of COVID. We don't know that yet.
Well, I can see behind you that it's a sunny day, so I'm going to let you go. And thank you for all these answers. Are very clear, and I think they're going to be very helpful, even the ones where we don't really know what's happening.
Well, yeah, you're welcome. You know, I think it's a moving target. It's always challenging, you know, with this type of thing. So I think, you know, asking your medical professional, we're always at Riley, we're happy to talk to parents and things, and we'll, it's a changing ball game. And so we're always happy to answer those questions.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your vacation too. It is a huge help and we really appreciate it.
Sure. Absolutely. Happy to do it.
My thanks again to Dr. James Wood. Now folks, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few strong stories I want to bring to your attention from the latest print issue of IBJ. The state of Indiana has an estimated $3 billion in federal funding coming its way with very few restrictions on how to spend it. Several IBJ reporters and editors took a deep look at three of the state's long-time but neglected priorities to gauge the impact of a $3 billion windfall. Their stories examined the money's potential impact on upgrading the state's water infrastructure, giving every home in the state a fiber connection for the internet, and refreshing and redeveloping the White River as a recreation amenity across the state. Also in this week's issue, Susan Orr explores how the adult entertainment industry in Indiana is trying to get to the bottom of a legal question that affects many Hoosiers. When is an independent contractor really an employee covered by minimum wage and overtime laws? And Kirk Christian reports that the president of the Westfield City Council is now questioning whether to move forward with a $15 million project to widen State Road 32 that's been in the works for more than a decade. Again, you can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of IBJ's latest local news about business and politics, as well as all of our data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. So just go to ibj.com and click the subscribe button. Hey, thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.